Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
I know that some in our audience know the finer points of hockey.
The Chris Johnston Show.
We are your friends.
The biggest stories, bringing you inside the game.
What did you hear?
The Chris Johnston Show.
What is going on?
Here's Chris with your host, Julian McKenzie.
Part of the game.
Siege, the Leafs are down 3-1 in their series against the Boston Bruins. And game four looked like an absolute unraveling. And it might not have been personified more than through the bickering of the three players on the bench, Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, William Nylander. That basically personified where this team is at right now. What did you make of them fighting and sniping at each other on the bench? We'll break down that entire game four as much as we can, but we have to start there.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty stunning. I would say for a couple of reasons. I mean, look, hockey's an emotional sport. Teammates, you know, argue. I remember Nathan MacKinnon, Jared Bednar have got into it over the years. Like, it's not always a sign of trouble. But given, you know, 8 years into these guys being teammates, we've never seen anything quite like this. That, to me, they took one shift together in the game. The Bruins had iced the puck, and so Sheldon Keefe took advantage of the fact that Jim Montgomery didn't have the players he wanted on the ice. He went for sort of a supernova line, put out Matthews, Marner, and Nylander. They had basically a completely ineffective shift. They go back to the bench, and that happens. But watching that unfold, it's impossible for me not to think that wasn't about one bad shift or one bad pass or a misread of a play. And, you know, really more emblematic of a lot of emotions, whether they be frustrations, whatever you want to call it, bubbling to the surface, boiling over. And in a game the Leafs absolutely needed on home ice, you know, it's still only 2-0 at that point in the game. I mean, by no means were things going well. They'd had a 4-on-3 power play earlier in the period where those were three of the four guys on the ice along with John Tavares. And, you know, it did. They came unglued. They came apart. And yes, they came back in the third period without Austin Matthews, put on a bit of a push. Mitch Marner scored a goal, the only goal the Leafs got on the night. You could argue that's a response, but my goodness. You know, really, it did feel to me as the title of my article at The Athletic, that sort of the end of the Leafs as we knew them. And, you know, that was probably going to happen or is probably going to happen had they lost in any fashion. But just seeing another series play out and you know, it's not a clear thing to break down because of the fact that there's been some injury situations. Obviously, that was Nylander's first game four in the series. Matthews was not as himself in game three, plays two periods of game four. So there's definitely complicating factors here, mitigating factors. But it's just yet another series where the Leafs can't score. And half their lineup is still, you know, half the cap dollars, give or take, are still assigned to four forwards and, you know, forced forwards that are super accomplished individually in the league, but collectively it just has not worked in the past. It's not working in the present. And I must say, I do have a, you know, from conversations I was able to have Saturday night and just sort of, you know, my working knowledge of the team, there's a real sense that these guys are coming apart, that, you know, maybe it's just the strain of all the years, right? Like, I mean, it's the same way I would say to any fan, look, you know, if whatever you're feeling in the midst of this, like if you're just done with it, I kind of get it. It's been 8 years and you're seeing the same things again and again and again. And I think the players are feeling that too. And I think that there's, you know, it's not to say they can't come back in some way, shape, or form with this group or whatever, but I just think it's a sign change is coming, and it's probably a change that's. I mean, certainly, I think it's overdue, and I feel like it's inevitable now, unless they can do something improbable, which would be coming back from 3-1 down. I know you're going to say, "Yeah, but the Bruins did that last year. This is a little different." This feels a little different.
That's how I feel too. Like, I know sometimes I play a little dumb with some of the questions I'll ask about the Leafs and be like, well, why is it that they can't come back? Like, it could be possible. There's nothing about this Leafs team right now that tells me that they can come back. And I get that, you know, game four is game four on its own. It's in a silo. Games in the playoffs are their own silos, and momentum can change. Momentum is a tricky thing to discuss in the playoffs. There isn't anything about this Leafs team right now that tells me that they can come back. Maybe they win game five, but I don't know if this team could come back from 3-1 down. There's nothing about this team that tells me they can do that.
Well, and I will eat my words if it happens. Like, sure. I will put my hand up and say that I counted them out, that I thought it was done. I mean, I think it's over, honestly. But there's still games to be played. 3-1 down, lots of teams have done it in history. Like, it's certainly not impossible. The Leafs still do have an immense amount of talent. Maybe their power play does just break out. Maybe Joseph Woll enters a series as the Leafs goaltender and goes on a heater. Maybe Jeremy Swayman falls back to earth after being, you know, really just a stabilizing, impenetrable force for the Bruins. I mean, the reason we watch the games is we don't know what's going to happen. But, you know, I just feel like you've seen the movie enough here. And, you know, an interesting part about that bickering, Julian, is that William Nylander was wearing a microphone on this night. Now, I think it's fair to assume, given the sensitivity around that conversation, that we'll never hear that audio, but my goodness, what would that be worth if you could? I mean, you can read his lips enough that you have a pretty good idea what he was saying, but
oh yeah.
I mean, wouldn't you actually like to hear him say it? You might actually hear a little bit more of what else was being said back, because, you know, you're kind of limited to where the camera splices are in that sequence. Like, I have a reasonable idea of what Nylander was saying, but I don't know exactly what precipitated it. You know, my point is with that audio, it might all come to light. Unfortunately, I don't believe Amazon, even though they're featuring Nylander as part of their work, will ever be able to get that audio on there. But audio does exist of that exchange, not just on the Sportsnet and TNT broadcast.
Well, that answers my question. I was wondering if it was an Amazon thing or a Hockey Night in Canada thing, but like, man, I would pay a lot of money for that audio, man, because there was a lot of lip reading being done through that exchange. I thought he said, it's funny, the last episode we were talking about possible lip reading, and I was like, yeah, you got to be careful. It yeah. really looked like dude said, stop effing around, this isn't Junior. Like, that looked pretty bad.
Yeah, and he also said, it appeared that he said, stop crying, bro.
Yeah, stop crying.
Prior to that.
Yeah, sorry. Like, it's just...
But it's dangerous, man. Game, because I will say, yes, remember the previous clip where Brad Marchand at the end of game three scored an empty net goal, and it looked like he could be saying, could
yes.
this thing's over in five. I actually asked a few Leafs players after that, like, did you hear him say that? And nobody at least was willing to cop to hearing it. So it doesn't mean he didn't say it, but like, it's not 1,000% or 100% clear that he did say that. There is a world that Nylander was saying something close to what we're saying, or that it was contextualize, like, who knows? Like, it's dangerous to jump to too many conclusions, but the body language, if we're not even trusting the words, the body language tells us everything. Marner throwing his gloves down.
Yep.
I mean, it's a pretty dramatic moment. And, you know, these guys individually, again, have kind of delivered on the promise that they entered the league with. Like, there's no denying it. Austin Matthews just won his third Rocket Richard trophy, and he's got a Hart and a Ted Lindsay and a Calder in his back pocket. And, you know, we'll probably still add more hardware in the future. You know, Marner was nominated for the Selke Trophy last year. Nylander's coming off a 98-point season. I mean, these guys individually have become the players that they were hyped to be, or that they were discussed. If you go back to 2016, 2017, you know, their early days in the league. But, you know, what's fascinating, and there's all kinds of reasons, and we could probably devote like a 90,000-part series to why this is. But collectively, they've not done what the Leafs banked on, right? Like, yeah. If you want to simplify, and I know there's all these nicknames and monikers over the years, the Shanna plan simply was amass special talent and don't veer from the plan even when it gets hard. Like, that's been that if you go back to his original words, he said something to the effect of, the problem in Toronto isn't making the plan, it's sticking to the plan. So they made the plan, they bottomed out, they drafted these guys, they protected them, they resisted change, you know, through all the things over the years. I mean, Washington the first year, that was all gravy. They made the playoffs. These guys were all rookies. It was a surprising, nice story. They actually took They lost three games in overtime in that series. They took Washington, who was the President's Trophy winner at the time, to six games. That's gravy. They lose the 2018 to Boston, right? Game seven. They push that thing to game seven. Fair enough. 2019, it looks like there's progress. They win game one, game three, and game five. They're ahead 1-0, 2-1, 3-2, and then losing game seven. Then you get to the COVID years. It gets a little weird there, right?
Yeah.
2020, coming out of the pandemic, like 4 months off, they lose a five-game series to Columbus, a team that basically everybody thought was dead to rights before the puck was dropped. But I don't know how much you want to read into it because COVID was a weird time. I'm not excusing it, but I'm just saying there's for any team, like Boston, if you remember, lost really badly in that COVID. Remember Tuukka Rask left the bubble. Like, my point is, didn't mean it was the end of the Bruins. It just was a weird time.
It was
2021, up 3-1 against Montreal in game five in overtime, in game six in overtime, like the first 10 or 11 shots of overtime. They still lose game seven. Like, sorry, I don't mean to relitigate history, but I'm just saying, through all of those things, what did they do? They stuck to the Shanahan plan. They kept those players there. They kept moving the pieces around them as much as they could. They managed the cap as much as they could. They traded draft picks like teams trying to win a cup do, trying to bring in, you know, reinforcements constantly, you know, getting late career Joe Thornton, late career Patrick Marleau, you know, late career Jason Spezza for a few years. You know, they got late career Mark Giordano on the, you know, all sorts of, honestly, great guys. Like this is not on any of them per se, but I'm just saying they stuck to the plan, but it just feels like now in year eight, I don't know how they can stick to the plan. I just, you know, with a small caveat, I suppose if they win the next three games against Boston and go on to round two and go on some run, and like if they really adopt an us against the world mentality, if they make, you know, like columns like the one I posted at The Athletic on Sunday morning look stupid, then I suppose that's how you move forward. But, you know, that, I'll tell you, Saturday night game four in Scotiabank Arena felt like the end of something. It really felt like rock bottom. You know, even there was like the between games discussion with the fans. For Toronto, the fans for the first half of that game were as good as Toronto will get. Like, it was energetic. It wasn't just relying on when the Leafs had scoring chances or a power play. Like, the fans tried to pick them up. Even when they went down 1-0 in the later stages of the first period, like, the fans were there. Like, they were trying to will the team forward. This, you know, it just feels like the experiment there's probably 1,000 reasons why. It's not one simple solution, but there is a consistent problem. They get to the biggest games of the year, a team that scores consistently in the top five in the league. I think they might've been second in the league this year in regular season goals per game. And here they are heading into game five with 1.75 goals per game in the playoffs. Like, it's perplexing. And I actually went back and read all the stories I wrote the nights they were eliminated in those games. That's why some of those details were fresh.
You went back?
Well, because, you know, the cool thing when you're writing in the moment, right, Julian, and like you do this too, you don't capture everything, right? Because it's hard to, you don't have the full picture, but you definitely you're capturing a moment. You're capturing a feeling. You're capturing kind of a glimpse into that time. And I was writing back and as that Montreal loss that they had to adjust the core. So like, my point is I can prove at least that 3 years ago, I thought that this should happen. I can't imagine with, you know, Keith Pelley now running MLSE, with all kinds of question marks. I mean, Brendan Shanahan is the president. I'm not saying he's going to be fired, but he's coming up to the end of his tenure. He's been the one link that has been there through that entire era. You know, he was there when Dave Nonis was still GM. I mean, people will forget that era so long ago, at least by sporting terms. And he's had multiple GMs under him, many head coaches, probably 100+ players or more, you know. So he's got an answer to it. I mean, I think we would expect that Sheldon Keefe with 5 years at the helm, you know, starting with that Columbus series.
If this series ends with the Leafs losing, he's got to go. I said this last year. I was under that impression that he'd be gone last year. If Sheldon Keefe and parts of that core four, maybe even Brendan Shanahan, you can lump him in this. If you are going to bring back those core pieces next year, you're kidding yourself. You're kidding yourself. You're literally going to be doing the same thing you've been doing year in, year out, where you're shuffling out all these ancillary pieces. Oh, fuck, I can't even speak. You're taking out all these other pieces that are complementing your core.
We just got an explicit warning on this pod.
Yeah, sorry about that. Fuck. Okay, I can't even speak.
No, it's good. I like it.
But seriously, that's essentially what you're going to be doing if you're bringing back Matthews, Marner, Tavares, Nylander. Someone has to go. If Sheldon Keefe is coming back, what are you doing? If Brendan Shanahan has to be the guy to go, he has to go too.
Can we go there? We have to go there. I know
we
this
have
is
to
like
go there. We
no, but we were treading back over
there.
Old territory. But I think it's fresh in light of what we've seen now.
Yes,
like Kyle Dubas realized this last spring. He said as much. He said it was lost in all the. There's a lot of things went haywire in that last few days of last. You know, the after the Leafs lost their last game last year to the Panthers in game 5, but he realized the core had to change. And I actually don't put this at Brad Tree Living's feet because the man was hired May 31st or June 1st. I can't remember, but like basically like 3 weeks from the draft, nobody coming into that job was going to trade like Mitch Marner. First of all, it's probably a trade you're not winning then or now. Like the what you're doing is you're making a fundamental decision to change your core, but you're probably not getting equal assets back again. Then too, I don't just mean now, and it's an impossible deal to make when you've just been hired. And so they let Kyle Dubas go, or you know, it was obviously a power play there with Brendan Shanahan, and they did it right when he realized, and he'd been there for 5 years, that it had to change. So it guaranteed one more year of same. And, you know, Tree Living did what the previous generation had done. Maybe he took a different approach, obviously more meat and potato style defenseman he brought in. He went and get Max Domi, Tyler Bertuzzi, you know, and for a time, look at that. That was cooking pretty good for the Leafs. But at the end of the day, what was going to be measured in the playoffs? Obviously, you win and lose as a team, but the top performers have to pull you through. And the top performers, top paid guys anyway, remain the same. And so finally, I do think we're going to enter this spring where, first of all, every one of them has no move clauses.
Yep.
So that will be a factor. Like, I don't know how that gets navigated, and it's probably too soon to go too deep into that, but it's worth pointing out. Like, if all of them just say, hey, we're staying, screw you, there's literally nothing the team can do. Now, there's...
Except fire Sheldon Keefe at that point. At that point, if all four of those guys say, man, hey, we're sticking through it, we believe in this team, we think
you know
we
what?
Win a cup here,
you know
Sheldon
what?
Keefe has to go.
You were watching the game, Julian.
Yeah, well, I tried
you
as much as I
could. You saw on the bench. Again, that's a moment, but that moment was 8 years in the making.
Yes.
I'll tell you, I asked John Tavares post-game as part of the scrum.
Yes.
You know, there's some sniping on the bench. How do you guys stay together? Something that was the sort of gist of my question. And he said, a lot of us have been here a long time. That was the first thing he said. Then he got into what you would expect. He tried to characterize it as a positive. We're holding each other to a high standard. Hey, look it, maybe that's right. But the first words out of his mouth, I thought were true.
Absolutely true.
Players feel what the fans feel and what the media have seen.
Yes.
It's been a long time, and it's the same thing again and again and again. And it just feels like under the weight. I mean, let's call it as it is, and I mean this with respect. The Bruins have never been more beatable than the current Bruins. Like, this is no longer, you can't just say, that's my opinion, but you can't just say, like, oh, the Leafs are in a tough division. They are, but there's many tough divisions out there. The Bruins went to the cup final, for example, as recently as 2019 in game 7. They had to beat tough teams, including the Leafs, on the way to get there. I mean, that just is what it is. And to me, other than the Panthers, like the Panthers, you might argue, are as strong as they've been ever.
Yeah.
Right now.
Yeah.
But Tampa is no longer. But Tampa is no longer what Tampa was. They're yes. Look at, give those guys credit. They're playing with the heart of a champion. They're fighting and clawing. Stamkos has scored in every game in the playoffs. Like, they are not going easily into the night, but they clearly are a diminished version of what they were 3 years ago. I think the Bruins, without question, are even a diminished version of what they were last year. And I know they lost in round one to the Panthers. But the point is the Leafs, they're not even losing. Like, at this point, they're losing as favorites, and they're losing resoundingly. I mean, they can't kill a penalty and they can't score a power play goal. And they have the second best goaltender on the ice every night. And the star players haven't, other than Austin Matthews in game two, was literally went out. And as much as you, no player wins a game on their own, but it's about as close as you get. It was like as dominant a performance, certainly as he's had in the playoffs. And it was a night where he was just like, this doesn't matter what's going on. This is not happening on my watch. But, you know, and this is where it gets tricky. As I said, there's injuries and Nylander's only played the one game in the series. And there's just a lot of other shit that makes this mucky. But
that's where I want to go next. Like, what's going on with Austin Matthews here? Like, last episode we were talking about him, and you mentioned the fact that he played through an illness in passing, and we kind of thought that was going to be a big deal. And now all of a sudden he's not playing third period in game four because of an illness. Like, what's going on with him?
Well, look, he has a dominant game two.
Yeah.
The Leafs come home. That's, you know, they tie the series up in Boston. They come home. No reason to have any concern or thought about him as his status. Game three morning skate comes along. He misses it. The whole team is on the ice except for him,
mm-hmm.
including Nylander, who at that point hadn't played in the series. And, you know, when I checked in at then, I was sort of given the impression they thought it was like a 24-hour, 48-hour kind of like really unfortunate timing to have to spend maybe a bunch of time in the bathroom, like definitely sap your energy, probably feel like crap. Like I'm not, you know, but there was, the thought was, okay, he guts through game three, which he did. And then there's 2 days off before game four. Like that will be time to rest and recovery. Didn't skate on those 2 days off. And unfortunately for Austin, you know, he plays game five or four rather for two periods and then has to pull the plug. And, you know, one thing that Sheldon Keefe mentioned Sunday at practice or at sort of the availability they had at the practice rink is that it's an illness that they thought would be sort of run of the mill, pass quickly, but that when he exerts himself, it's getting worse for whatever reason. So basically when he's playing, when he gets playing the game, he feels much worse than when he starts the game. And so I don't get the sense the Leafs know exactly what it is or, you know, what virus it is, what's going on. It's the worst timing for something like that to pop up. And, you know, you would have to imagine, I mean, look, on a human level, I hope he's okay. Like you'd have to imagine he's going to do anything he can to play game five. But I don't know what version of him it is. Is it going to be the same thing? He plays a period, his heart rate gets up, he's got a, I don't know. Let's not go into like what's happening with his body, but you know, we've all been sick. Like, is he unable to continue on for whatever reason? I mean, it's obviously a factor here, but I still think it's deeper. Like teams have to win without their best players at times. The Leafs actually have talked with pride about that they've, you know, went through a period this season. Mitch Marner was out for a big chunk of March with a high ankle sprain. They won way more than they lost. Matthews continued scoring a goal a game without him on his wing in that stretch. They played without Morgan Riley when he was suspended earlier in the year. I mean, like they've had to do this in the past. And I think any team that wants to play for a long time has to understand all of your players won't always be feeling great. The timing of this with Nylander even missing three games after playing 82 in the regular season, like I can see why if Steve Dangle thinks the Leafs are cursed. I mean, some of this stuff you start to think like, how is this coming up? Right.
It's could you imagine being a Leafs fan and realizing like, oh no, William Nylander is struggling with a migraine. And look, I respect the fact that migraines are painful and Austin Matthews is playing through whatever illness is ailing him. And look, it may be very well ailing, but like, could you imagine being in that position where you're seeing those top players going through whatever mystery thing they're going through? And then you're watching a little bit of the Tampa Florida series and like Mikhail Sergachev is playing like almost 2 months after fracturing a tibia and a fibula. Different things. But like you said yourself, it's the playoffs. Like there's a level of frustration you have to feel knowing that your players are going through some weird crap and then someone else going through something. I don't know if you want to categorize it as worse. I'll let you do that if you want to. But tibia and your fibula is no joke.
I want to tread carefully on that ground because I'm not actually putting it on those players. Like, I'm going to assume that they really badly want to be playing. And I'm going to assume that there's things about their health conditions that we don't know. And that there's probably maybe very, like, when there's no games left to be played and everyone can be honest, maybe there's very good reasons to explain their absences. So I'm not
absolutely, and I don't want
to.
I'm not calling
those guys out. What I am saying though is you have to win without those guys. You still it's down to results at the end of the day. And you know, Sheldon Keefe said Sunday as well, and I almost he said this series is closer than it looks, and like I believe him, but you almost want to say yes, but you have to be on the right side of close, right? And it's funny. Talk about columns that didn't age well. What I wrote after they won in game two in Boston is one that didn't age well, because that was to me like the exact playoff kind of win. Like they ground out the game. They showed resolve. They didn't trade chances. They didn't panic when it wasn't going their way and they were behind. They had a potential goal taken off the board by a high stick, but like they had to fight through it, and they didn't veer from a plan and they won the game. And I was like, okay, wow. This is a sign that the Leafs know how get the job done. And then, you know, here we are 5 days later, 6 days later, and it's like, well, maybe not.
Yeah. To be clear, when I mentioned Sergachev, I don't want to belittle whatever the Leafs players are going through. It's just trying to explain that, like, if you're a fan, you're probably feeling some kind of frustration seeing someone play through some measure of pain, and you're still kind of in the dark about what your own players are going through.
Well, what you're not seeing is a team in Toronto that's like, they're not banding together and finding a way.
No.
Like, I know that's a very simplified way of looking at it, but that's what you see in Boston. Like, do you know what's hilarious part of this series?
What?
And I'm going to just go out and guess, and there's some sort of rumblings around the series. I don't think David Pastrnak is 100% right now. David Pastrnak has not been what he is in the series. I know he scored that goal at the end of the second period in game four. He did score in game two as well. But like, he's not dominating it the way you would expect a player of his talents to do so. And yet the Bruins are still finding ways to win, right? Like, look at their game one win. Like, the first goal of the series is like Johnny Beecher, right?
Yep,
and then,
Johnny Beecher.
You know, Brandon Carlo scored in that game. Jake DeBrusk, who had been a bit snake bitten, has scored a few power play goals. Like, they are finding a way to get the job done. Even if, and Marchand, to be fair, these last two games in Toronto in particular, I thought, like, really, if I'm giving Matthews the kind of the flowers for saying it, not on his watching game two, I mean, Marchand just came into Toronto and clowned the whole city.
Yes.
And looked like he had a damn fine time doing it. Like, he is, I respect the hell out of that guy. And that's a hard earned respect, because if we were doing this pod 10 years ago, we would have been talking about all the stupid shit he was doing every game. And so much of that is gone. I actually haven't checked. I don't think he's taken a penalty in the series, or maybe one.
That's insane. One minor.
But like, he's not, he's drawing penalties. He's scoring goals. He's playing the right way. Bad things are not happening when he's on the ice for the Bruins. Anyway, I'm getting diverted a little bit, but I'm just saying that the Boston has found a way, even if, like, say someone like Pastrnak isn't at their best. They found a way this season without, you know, Bergeron and Krejci. They found a way when Tuukka Rask moved on. They found a way when Zdeno Chara moved on and aged out of where they were at. I mean, on some level, that's what the sport's about. And I think where we should be with the Leafs, or what I see, is just they're not a team that can band together and find their way through. You know, like, after the game, when talking about that bickering thing, you know, Nylander says, you know, that's what we do. We love each other. And Marner's like, yeah, when we yell at each other, it's not because we hate each other. It's like, for me, I actually don't care if you love or hate each other. Like, I don't know that that's important. I think that there's a lot of love and hate and lots of successful job dynamics. You know, it's about, do you respect each other? Can you work together? Can you find a way to be a little better than you're supposed to be? Can you step up when someone isn't there? Can you pick up a teammate? Are you pointing fingers when something goes wrong, or are you finding something within yourself? And I just don't see enough of those qualities in this team and in those players to think that they have really any shot to come back. And this is a recorded episode. It's going to live on the internet. I recognize that I'm potentially getting ahead of myself, that I could save these words to Thursday's episode and just assume by then the season's done. But, you know, I'm willing to be proven wrong, and I'm willing to watch and listen. Like, I don't have to make up my mind. I'm flying to Boston on Monday. I'm going to the game on Tuesday. If there's another game on Thursday, I'm going to that game. If there's another game seven on Saturday, I'm going to that game. Like, I, you know, we just experience it in real time, and we call it as we see it. I just think this team has totally come undone. I think they've had no answer. I think that the coaching adjustments have not been satisfactory. You can't have a power play with one goal with this lineup of players. You know, you might not even realize this about the Bruins. I only do because I've been covering the series. They had 3 power play goals in their last 11 regular season games. Game 81 of the season, they just blew up 2 power play units. Like, they basically decided that the one that's loaded up with their top offensive talent was getting stale. They spread a lot. The guys in, you know, for a time, Pat Maroon was in. He's off now, but Morgan Geekie was introduced. They balanced the 2 units. There really isn't a true one, a true two. And now they have 6 goals in 4 games in the series on the power play.
Making adjustments.
That was a bold coaching call.
Yeah.
You know, the Leafs, and the one change they made is William Nylander entered the series for game 4. So he went back on the top unit. You know, they started with Cale Yarncroke in game 1 in Nylander's spot. They made it Tyler Bertuzzi in game 2. But like, they have not done the same thing. And I get that it's probably sensitive. There's a lot of offensive mouths to feed, I would call it, right? I mean, when you have a Marner, a Tavares, a Matthews, a Nylander, like, those guys obviously are paid to score or set up, create offense. You're always struggling maybe to make sure each is getting the right amount of minutes and opportunity. How do you play them together, split them up, all that stuff? Like it's a good problem to have when you have too much talent sometimes, but it's still a problem. But we haven't seen anything like that. And who knows? Maybe they go nuclear for game 5. Like, that. There's 2 ways of looking at that. If you blow everything up for game 5, some idiot's going to be like, well, then you're so desperate. Like, you didn't even have a plan. But then the other part would be like, we have nothing to lose. Why not try something totally different than what we've been doing? I'm sure that's some of the debate. I've simplified hours of debate between now and the next game for the coaching staff, but I think that will be some of what they're discussing, is like, how much change is too much change? Do you start Joseph Woll instead of Ilya Samsonov? I think that has to happen.
I one thing I wrote in my notes here is like, is Ilya Samsonov done for this series? I mean, you pull him and you're, I mean, I don't know. Like, you can't go back to him, right? Joseph Woll,
he might be done as a Leaf. I mean, he's a free agent.
He might be done as a Leaf. You're right.
I don't know what they're, I mean, they played Joseph Woll in 3 of the last 10 games of the regular season. So, like, he looked pretty good in the third period of game 4, but like, he hasn't played much lately. So I don't know how fair that is to him. I mean, none of this is good, man.
Not,
you know,
the Leafs.
I don't even know what it matters, because this season obviously was what it was. But the Leafs lost their last 4 games of the regular season too.
They did.
So they've lost 7 of 8 right now. Does it feel like a 3-game winning streak's right around the corner after losing 7 of 8, after having your stars bickering on the bench, after having your best player and scorer be so ill he can't play the end of a playoff game? You know, Sheldon Keefe today was trying to accentuate the positive. He was talking about, like, he wants the players' minds to be in the right place. Like, that's his job. It almost felt like he's more therapist today than coach.
I wondered if he was doing that yesterday too, or if he was trying to just downplay stuff, because the one quote going around about how you shouldn't question the team's effort. Is that, I don't know if that's accurate. I don't know. I just, you tell me. But I thought that was a really interesting thing to say.
Okay, let's imagine you're at the microphone with all those cameras and your team just had that loss on home ice under those circumstances. Mm-hmm. How do you handle that question? Because if you say the effort wasn't there, you risk losing your players, right? Your players might be like, what the hell, man? Because, you know, it's still they had like 50-odd body checks in the game. Like, it's still a physical game. I'm not defending the Leafs by any stretch, but I'm sure the players are ice bags after every playoff game, pretty much everywhere, but especially in the Atlantic. Like, these teams go at each other. Like, I don't know if you saw the end of the Panthers-Lightning yesterday. Like, right to the end of the buzzer. Like, slashes, body checks, like... The dark arts are very much at play every time there's
I can accept that, but if I'm Sheldon Keefe, like, what's wrong with me saying we need more? The players are going to tell me they don't want to give more. I think if you say this, if you're in a position like that and you say, well, you know what, we're down 3-1 in the series, we need more from our guys.
Yeah,
is that bad?
No, I'm just saying it's a interesting debate, like. Because keep in mind, part of what he's saying is for the fans and for you and I to have some quotes in our story. Part of what he's saying is it's players are going to hear it or see a snippet of it or whatever. So he's messaging externally and internally at the same time when he answers those questions. And I'm not sure there was a win there, because I will say this, and I actually wrote it. So if you read my column, you know what I'm about to say. I don't actually question that the Leafs aren't full of players who really want to win. I just don't think that they're capable of doing it together. Like, I don't think they're the right collection of players in the right situation being deployed in the right way. I don't see it happening, but I don't think they don't want to win. Like, I don't think it's a lack of care or effort. I think it's a lack of either the right mix of players. Well, a bit of that. And then a bit of just in a moment, like, they looked lost in that game.
They did.
They didn't look like they weren't trying. They almost looked like they didn't know what to do, which is a little different. Right? Like, it didn't look like they were quitting on the team or the season. I just think that they didn't have an answer. They haven't figured out a way to accentuate their offensive talents against the Bruins, to generate chances, to score goals, to get a lead. Like, they barely led in the whole series.
Yeah.
They barely led against the Bruins all year. Anyway, I did the math this morning. The last 61 Leafs playoff games I've covered, that one will be the one I might remember the most. The only other close would be the game 7 in 2013, just because of the very unique circumstances of losing a 4-1 lead in the seventh in game 7 in the third period. But I think I'll remember last night even more. Like, it really felt like rock bottom, like the end of something, you know. It felt like a moment that was overdue, and like, they've been steadfast in not touching certain aspects of the roster. And I don't know how they're going to do it with the no trade clauses. I don't know who's going to be making those decisions, but I can't imagine we're back at training camp if this just ends in game 5.
Yeah.
With all those players, like, so, you know, how was the summer? What's going to be different this year? Like, it's bad business at this point.
It is.
The fan base is completely fed up. Like, the people that pay a lot of money for those tickets, they've seen enough. They need a new plan.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode of The Chris Johnston Show is brought to you by Babbel. The best way to learn a language is through immersion, living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards, you can still learn a language the second best way, and that's with Babbel. 1 in 5 Americans have learned a new language on their bucket list. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel. It's a really great app to use where you are able to learn all these different languages and you don't have to pay hundreds of dollars for different tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel has 10-minute lessons that are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Studies from Yale, Michigan State University, and others continue to prove that Babbel is better. One study even found that using Babbel for 15 hours is equivalent to a full semester at college. That's pretty good. Here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/Johnston. Get 55% off at babbel.com/Johnston. That's spelled BABBEL.com/Johnston. And if it continues with game 5 going the Bruins' way, still the Leafs will have not been able to beat the Bruins in a playoff series since 1959. Like, 1959, you have not been able to get the one up on the Boston Bruins. Jim Crow laws were in effect in 1959. That's how long ago this was happening. Like, anyway, you know what?
Do you know what reminds me of? It reminds me a bit of Leafs Senators from the early 2000s, where it didn't matter what each team's respective season was. Like, Toronto beat them 4 times in 5 years, and definitely there were some seasons the Senators were by far the better team, but there was just almost like a psychological edge. There was a a way to know how to get the job done. There was just doubt planted in the other team's minds. I mean, it's not quite the same here because this is the fourth meeting in 11, 12 years. So like a lot of the characters have changed,
yes.
But it sort of feels like that. Like it kind of feels like Brad Marchand shows up to this series knowing like the Leafs will crumble. Well, he'll look at it and go like, yeah, the Leafs have better individual offensive players. They had players coming off seasons that are going to win them individual league awards from regular season. When it matters, we're not going to make the mistake that kills the game.
Yeah.
It's down to such small details in the playoffs, right? It's
always
literally,
gonna be like that.
You know, like Ryan Reeves, who's actually played well in the series, makes a turnover on the first goal. Just a failed clear out, and it's in the net in 2 seconds. And it wasn't the start you would want as the home team to that game. Like you, in theory, if you're the Leafs, you want to be dictating the terms and getting in the forecheck and throwing big hits and getting the crowd going and having all these scoring chances. But it was certainly, it would take the shots for 5-3, like 15 minutes into the first period in Toronto's favor. Like the point was, is they weren't getting dominated. They weren't hanging on for dear life. And then one mistake in the net and then the game changes. And the Leafs had a power play early in the game. Bruins, too many men on the ice call. They're third of the series. Like what a time to make them pay.
You can't.
Didn't even sniff a grade A. Like nothing that you would expect. Get to the second period. They get the 4-on-3. Like the core four, the old time, we don't really call it that around here anymore, but the old core four on there for 4-on-3, all kinds of ice. Like you don't get that in the playoffs very much, right? A chance to really make a play, nothing.
Anyway. This power play for me is so wild to like, and I know regular season is different from playoffs, but I have literally seen a game this season where the Leafs power play, the Leafs were not playing that well against the Calgary Flames. I forget when that game was, but that power play won them the game with how they were flowing around and moving the puck around and getting goals. Auston Matthews scored a hat trick that game and fans were throwing hats on the ice. I was like, you know what? Like, this is just a sign that even if you might not be playing at 100%, the Leafs' best players can play like the best players and win games. So to see the power play just dry up and not be effective, that has completely blown my mind. I thought at the very least.
And it's every year. That's the weird part. They've had different power play coaches, like, you know, different assistants handling that duty over the years. You know, right now it's Guy Boucher. It's been Manny Malhotra. It was Spencer Carberry. They actually had a good power play last year in the first round against Tampa and it dried up against Florida. It was Jim Hiller back in the day.
Man.
Anyway.
We've gone.
My point is like,
go ahead.
Do you know what hasn't changed? The players on the power play. Like that's again, all signs point to the next step. We are 40 minutes in, I think, of this recording. We're still just talking about the Leafs.
Yeah, but like, yeah, I mean, that was honestly the intention because that's what everyone's going to talk about. But I do have some questions for you if you care to indulge. We'll start with Cody Brown. Shout out to everyone who sent in questions on Discord. As someone who lived in Port Hope for a long time and enjoyed many a Canada Day at Cobourg Beach, do you have any funny stories from Canada Day in Cobourg? I always remember the Cobourg kids would show up and be up to no good. I bet you were a ringleader of some shenanigans.
I don't know if I was ever the ringleader. I mean, I was definitely in the mix, but I don't think I was ever really I was kind of a timid kid. Like at that age time.
You didn't want to get in trouble?
I definitely, I really was afraid of getting in trouble. But yeah, I mean, so we had a waterfront festival in Cobourg every year. Great beach in Cobourg. If you've never been, you can put me on the Chamber of Commerce. I'll sell you tickets. Literally like they have the whole like midway in the games. They have, you know, local vendors sell art and everything they make. There's a beer tent. Which obviously for the age range that the question is being asked about, I had no place in, but I remember I'm sure Cobourg Papa back in the day was probably hitting the beer tent with his buddies now and again.
I bet he was.
Yeah. I mean, I got nothing but great memories of the Waterfront Festival around Canada Day, but I don't think I have a good story, but I appreciate it's funny. Cobourg and Port Hope, the way rivalries are like they're neighboring towns. If you've never heard of either, you're probably like, what is this? It's like Springfield and Shelbyville in Simpsons or something. Like,
great.
But there's always a lot of rivalry between the towns. It's funny now because so many of my buddies that I grew up with in Cobourg live in Port Hope. Like, you grew up and realized that the world is much bigger than this 10-kilometer radius that when you're a kid that like mattered. So Port Hope's a great spot too. Lots of great restaurants there. And yeah, sorry. Didn't answer the spirit of the question, but I love the love from Port Hope.
This next question, I guess, is more along the spirit of what we've been discussing for 40 minutes from Yusuf Rashid. Hey, CJ, with the meltdown on the Leafs bench last night, what's the most realistic outcome for this team if they lose this series?
I think Mitch Marner's situation is the most intriguing individually. Just because he's up to potentially sign an extension as of July 1st. I'm not saying he's being traded. I don't know. But I think that's the one to watch. You're not trading Austin Matthews. You've just given William Nylander an 8-year extension that kicks in on July 1st. So presumably he's not part of it. John Tavares is your captain. He's entering the final year of his deal. He said last year at the end of the season he didn't want to waive his no-movement clause. Can't imagine that's changed. I haven't asked him because it wouldn't be appropriate, I don't think, while the series is going on. But I'm sure he'll get that question if and when their season ends in the near future. But I think what happens with Mitch Marner is a very open question. I think you just get the feeling he's a very frustrated guy. It might be time for all sides here to have a fresh start. And so he's the one big name I would circle. I mean, obviously there's all kinds of changes coming. TJ Brody's at the end of his contract. There's, stuff like every team has an off season where you're losing, five or six players, probably call it off the main roster. But, Marner is the biggest question and he controls his fate. So again, I don't know how he feels exactly, but he may just say I'm not moving, but I think if this ends as badly as it looks like it could, there has to be a discussion there to see if the team and he can work to find a resolution.
From Brave Pip. Hey guys, Jeremy Swayman and Linus Ullmark have their cool post-win bear celebration. What would Julian and CJ's post-win celebration be?
I'd like just copy theirs, man. Big bro hog for you.
Yeah, I think so. I could do the whole like point to the ground, like, yeah, you're here. And then, and then the hug. I'm cool with that.
Did you see that like little kids are doing this now? I saw this on social media somewhere, but there was like two little kids, like literally like 8-year-olds at the end of a game doing the, like mimicking it. Like what a cool thing to have mimicked, I guess, is like supporting your teammate. Like it's all the right things. Sports can veer into all these lanes we aren't comfortable with. But I mean, that's one that seems pretty cool. Like I really genuinely feel like Swayman and Ullmark like each other, support each other.
Yes.
I'm sure there's like this sort of internal friendly competition because they both would want to be playing any given game. There's one net for them to play in, but you don't get the feeling it's the opposite of arguing with your teammate on the bench. Put it that way.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Next one from Congo Red. The SDP reminisced about their parents getting Disney movies on VHS as kids. What kind of media did CJ get from Coburg Papa?
What? I'm old enough to remember renting VHSs. That wasn't that long. Like obviously DVDs came along while I was still a kid. There was a movie called Tiger Town. It was about the Detroit Tigers and a young kid was a fan of the Tigers. He would like sneak into the games or he would go to the games. Maybe didn't sneak in. Maybe that's just like I'm projecting my own.
This sounds like your story.
I kind of think he might have snuck in, though. But anyway, he was like a little kid who was obsessed with the Tigers, and they go on this miracle run and win the World Series. And I love that movie. And I think it was a Disney movie. There was obviously all the traditional movies when I was young, like Beauty and the Beast and Little Mermaid and Lion King and whatever else. But I was like, I must say, I was a sports-obsessed kid. So this movie called Tiger Town, which I was watching it late, like it came out in the early 80s and but I was watching it like 5 years later. I just loved it. 'Cause it was about a kid like obsessing over his team. And that was me.
I like that. That's a really, it was in fact a Disney movie. I'd never heard of this movie. Apparently the year after the movie came out, the Tigers won the World Series.
There you go.
In the movie. Yeah, they did.
And I probably was not watching that movie till like 1990 or something, but like it was an older movie when I saw it, but I just like loved it. And we would rent it. I didn't own it or anything, but we would rent it. I liked all the movies that came out. Like I really liked the Mighty Ducks, like in real time when it came around. I like that movie, Angels in the Outfield. I like that movie, was it called The Rookie, I think? Where the little kid, he pitches for the Chicago Cubs.
Yeah, I think that's the movie you're thinking of here. I see it in my head. Yeah,
The Rookie. I think it's called The Rookie or something like that. Rookie of the Year, maybe?
It might be. Maybe I'm messing up the names of the movies in my head, but I see exactly what you're talking about. Like, I've seen that.
I think the kid's name was Henry Bumgardner.
It is Henry Rowengartner and his Rookie of the Year. That came out in 1993.
So, I was 11 years old. I love that movie when it came out. I loved all the sort of sports movies. I love Tin Cup, which I realized is a bit later than that. Yeah. But Tiger Town was the original, was the OG. I should go back and watch it. The problem is, if you ever watched Julia, something you really liked as a kid, usually it does not age well. No, usually everything ages really poorly. But I loved it as a kid. I remember connecting a lot with the kid who was the star of that movie.
I also think your description of Tiger Town is the best movie description you have ever given on this show.
I know, and it's something I watched 30 years ago. Isn't that nuts? And I can tell you, the first time I saw that might have been 1988, and the last time might have been 1990, and I haven't seen it since, but I just remember loving that movie as a kid.
Stay tuned for a future episode of the CJ Show, where we play the movie game, Sports Movie Edition. That's going to do it for our early week edition of the CJ Show. It was very Leafs oriented, but that's,
I was gonna say, we can't even call that Leafs corner. That's like Leafs in intersection neighborhood.
Leafs village.
Village.
Yeah.
The villagers are not happy. I'll tell you that much.
No, they are banding together with tiki torches as we speak. They are not happy at all. Maybe it'll be a different story on Thursday when we talk about this team. Maybe it won't. Who knows? Subscribe to the podcast, however you listen to our show, whether it's on YouTube, whether it is through an audio podcast platform of your choosing, and make sure to subscribe to The Athletic so you could read all of CJ's great work on this series so far. We'll be back on Thursday, guys. Peace.
The Chris Johnston Show. Inside the game, twice a week. Follow Chris on Twitter, @ReporterChris. And follow Julian McKenzie, @JK McKenzie.